Now, on Life Matters, time to talk US politics. You may recall a couple of weeks back we invited American politics lecturer David Smith on to give us the drop on Donald Trump and his rather colourful family history. It was utterly fascinating. Well, the rise of Donald Trump on the American right coincides with an interesting parallel on the left, Bernie Sanders. And this morning, David's back to fill us in on the independent, self-described socialist who is running for the Democratic Party's nomination for president. David, welcome.
Good morning.
Now, Bernie Sanders is doing surprisingly well. He still trails Hillary Clinton by a decent margin, but he's won the last seven consecutive state nominating contests dating back to March 22. He's alive in this game.
He is. It's still very unlikely that he'll win. He's a long way behind Hillary Clinton in pledged delegates, and in order to catch up, he would need big wins in New York and California, and at the moment, opinion polls show him substantially behind there. But he has had a remarkable run, and I think that he can be credited for really changing the shape of the Democratic race and for probably forcing Hillary Clinton to take up more progressive stances on economic issues.
Now, interestingly, compared to Donald Trump, he's funded by, well, not by big companies. He doesn't take donations from, say, the fossil fuel industry, which is the largest political donor in the country.
Yeah, the average donation to Bernie Sanders is around $37. And he's made a big point right throughout his political career of not taking corporate money. And so Donald Trump says, I can't be bought, essentially because I'm too rich to be bought. Bernie Sanders can also make a legitimate claim that he can't be bought in that way, which is something that has a lot of appeal to many voters.
Now, before we get to his backstory, can you give us a summary of what he actually believes in? You know, what are the planks of the platform that he's running?
The best description I've seen of Sanders is that he's a New Deal Democrat. So he wants to dramatically increase the role of the United States government in the economy in the same way that FDR did back in the 30s and in many of the same ways and for the same reasons. So, for example, he wants to break up major banks in the same way that FDR did because he holds them responsible for the global financial crisis. He wants to greatly limit the role of corporate donations in politics. He wants to tax carbon emissions. And perhaps most ambitiously, he essentially wants to make all levels of education free from preschool up until college, and he wants to have universal single-payer healthcare. And that's more ambitious than anything that even FDR would have envisaged. Now, all of this will cost a lot of money, and the way that he wants to fund it is by steep increases in income tax on people earning over $250,000 a year, and also very steep increases in capital gains tax, essentially making it the same as income tax. So this would be really quite a substantial change in the relationship between the government and the economy in America.
He's almost as radical as Donald Trump. Now, he calls himself a democratic socialist. Isn't socialism really, you know, an unattractive, dirty word in America? Is that sort of antithetical?
It is. And it's interesting that he calls himself this, given that by most definitions of socialism, he's not a socialist. I mean, he's not like Jeremy Corbyn, for example, in Britain, who wants to actually nationalise major industries. He's not calling for control of the economy by workers' cooperatives. He's essentially wants capitalism with a very strong government safety net and with government spending to ensure social mobility. A lot of capitalist countries do this. I mean, Australia does this to some extent. So he's not really a socialist, but this reflects his sort of activist and very intellectual background. The term socialist, it's still a net negative in the United States. About 30% of people have a positive view, about 50% have a negative view, and then about 20% have no view. But especially with younger people who've got no memory of the Cold War, it doesn't really matter anymore. And I'd say also, since the kind of paranoid right in America has used this as an insult against Obama for the last 8 years, accusing him of socialism when, for example, he wanted to introduce Mitt Romney's healthcare plan on a national level, to some extent, it's actually lost all meaning. So the term socialist doesn't really hurt Sanders that much.
So take us back to New York in the 1940s. What's the origin story?
Sure. Well, he's described his upbringing as lower middle class. In his book, An Outsider in the White House, he says he knew what it was like to be in a family where lack of money was a constant source of tension and unhappiness. His father was an immigrant from Poland who had dropped out of high school, and he was a paint salesman. And he really doubted, for example, the value of Bernie actually going to college, although his mother was very strong on him going to college. His mother died at the age of 46. Unlike most presidential candidates, he has not made very much of his upbringing. In his book, this only gets a few paragraphs. He actually has an older brother called Larry, who was also a political radical and who he credits with giving him a lot of his ideas. Larry moved to England, became a social worker, and is now a councillor for the Greens in Oxfordshire. But Sanders doesn't make a huge amount out of his biography, other than quite a strong affinity with New York, which he's definitely playing up at the moment in the New York primary race.
So his parents were from Poland and Jewish.
Yes, his father was from Poland. His mother was American born. Yeah, so they were Jewish. And he said that like most people in his Jewish neighbourhood, his parents voted Democratic, although he says that they weren't actually very political themselves. But yes, he grew up in a very Jewish milieu in New York. There was quite a lot of radicalism in that community at that time, which he and his brother were both a part of.
Mm. Now, Brooklyn, that was pretty anti-establishment and pro-equality. He then went on to study political science in Chicago and graduated yes. in 1964. What shaped him there?
Well, he said that his out-of-class activities, by which he means political activism, really shaped him a lot more than the coursework that he did there. So he was a member of all of these organizations like the Congress of Racial Equality, the Student Peace Union, and the Young People's Socialist League, which is probably where he first picked up the
that's
tag.
That's so right on, isn't it? That's really the right on crowd.
That's right. And he was very involved in civil rights in Chicago. There was a photo of him that recently emerged getting arrested at a rally in 1963. That rally was actually protesting the use of substandard mobile classrooms to teach black children in Chicago in order to stop them from actually going to more affluent white schools. These things were known as Willis wagons, named after the school commissioner at the time, and he was very against those. And so he got arrested at a demonstration. And this has since been used to show that he does have a very long-standing commitment to civil rights.
Mm, that'd be a big tick for a lot of people. So after Chicago, he moved to Vermont, which yes. is a very small state in the northeast of the US. But he didn't enter politics. What was he doing there?
Well, a lot of hippies went to Vermont in the late 60s, which is a very rural state, looking for a natural lifestyle. And he was part of that wave, although his associates at the time say he wasn't a hippie. Even though he lived on a farm with no electricity or running water, he wasn't really into growing vegetables. He didn't do drugs. He didn't even like rock music. Apparently, he was really into country music. One associate, I love this description, described him as always a little bit on the suburbs of society. And during this time, so after his divorce in 1966, he basically eked together a living through carpentry and freelance journalism. But he also continued with his political activism at this point.
Wow. So he's one of that whole generation of people, and that's who he's talking to and their children, presumably. Now, just finally on his personal life, you said he was divorced and yes. he also has a son out of wedlock. Is that a problem for him in American politics?
I don't think this is really a problem anymore. And yes, he did get divorced and he had a son out of wedlock, but he's been married since 1988 to the woman who is the president of Burlington College. And despite a sort of turbulent early family life, he's had a very stable later family life. And I think that that's fine. Even Ronald Reagan was a divorcee. This might have hurt him in early eras, but especially compared to someone like Donald Trump, his family life actually looks pretty stable and normal.
Mm. Well, let's see. We'll find out whether he beats Hillary, whether the Democrats take office. If Hillary does take the nomination, would he be a deputy? A vice president?
Probably not. I think that Hillary Clinton would want to go for somebody younger. There's a bit of a across-the-board problem in the race at the moment with the age of the candidates. Given that Obama is a post-baby boomer candidate, it's a bit unusual to then go back to a baby boomer as president. So I think that Clinton would want somebody younger and would probably want someone from this sort of minority coalition that the Democrats have. However, I think that as a result of this race, Bernie Sanders will continue to have totemic status within the Democratic Party. I would expect to see him featured at the national convention. And I think even among supporters of Clinton, there is a certain amount of fondness towards him.
Well, if the visuals, as they say, count for anything, I think that moment where a little sparrow came, flew down yes. and sat on his lectern will be one of the defining moments of his run.
That's right. An almost magical moment. Although I think that a lot of people think that that his actual policies are pretty unfeasible.
Well, it does compare very interestingly with that one of Donald Trump being attacked by a bald eagle.
That's right, yes. Study in contrast.
Well, this is turning out to be some fascinating watching. Thanks for filling us in on Bernie. I wonder who we'll need to know about next time. Will you come back and tell us about whoever that turns out to be?
Absolutely, yes.
That's David Smith. He's Senior Lecturer in American Politics and Foreign Policy at the University of Sydney with the United States Studies Centre. Coming up, a story of survival at sea that'll have you gripped.